chassis down the runway, hand in hand. As we take off, we got our home flight plan. It's a non-stop life, but I'm loving you. As we take off on the go, we don't need a traffic control. It's a non-stop life, but I'm loving you. As we begin to gain altitude, just like to know if their love is true. It's a non-stop life.
Welcome to No Biz Like Showbiz. I'm your host, Randall Rutledge, with my co-host,
James Turner.
Mr. Las Vegas.
Mr. Las Vegas.
Yeah, sorry, Wayne. You're not Vegas. You're not Mr. Las Vegas anymore. James is taking the title from you.
Yep.
Well, what's been happening in the bright light city there of Viva Las Vegas?
Well, I'll tell you, it's getting hot. I'll tell you right now, it's even pushing 100.
Wow.
So we're starting our climb. Yep. But it's
I'd probably be like the Wicked Witch of the West from the 1939 film Wizard of Oz. I'm melting.
Mm-hmm. It's about 70 at night.
Wow.
90s. It's going to be cloudy today and tomorrow, but it's been really nice and warm. So, yeah, looking forward to summer. We're going to be steaming out here. They just had the thing for Danny Gans. In fact, we missed it. Too funny talking about it.
Huge headliner in Vegas.
A huge headliner in Vegas, Danny Gans. Been here 12 years, used to be a baseball player, and was at the Mirage for several years, and then just went over to the Encore since February. Seen the show, great impressionist, you know, singer, vocalist. You know, he's got some great, had some great talent. Anyway, he was a good man. He was a really good man. Certainly, he passed away a week from last Friday.
Wow.
So they just had the special invite for one of his gatherings. I mean, just one of his gatherings other than his funeral, you know, for paying tribute to him and all that stuff. So they just had a big gathering over the Encore today at his theater. I could have gotten tickets, just missed it on one of the places that we get our tickets from.
Yeah, I don't think anybody. I don't think there'll be anybody to replace Danny Gans. Is basically how he had just so many multi characters, or not so much characters, but impersonations of so many past and present big named acts. He could just duplicate them to the T.
Yeah, he was pretty good. He was one of the best. I've seen a few. Bill Acosta is another one. He was pretty good. I've seen him. But like Danny, you know, Danny was a unique character. Gave a lot to charity. He was a really good guy. And he was another one who had a great story, you know. Like I said, he was a baseball player. And
well, back in 1998, when I was producing the Street Singers that was created and directed by David E. Durston, he had went to Las Vegas to try to get Danny Gans to be the host of our non-air TV pilot, but unfortunately he was under contract and couldn't get away from Vegas for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, uh-huh.
But had he been able to, we would have had Danny Gans and the Street Singers when we shot that. That would have been me, but he was just, you know, contracted and had contractual obligations, just couldn't get away for the 3 or 4 days.
Right. Yeah, so anyway, 52 years old, was a young guy. Great guy. So anyway, that was going on. Just to bring something current that was happening today. And looking forward to a lot of stuff that's happening, you know, in town. So So we'll see, but, you know, it's all on the road to discovering Hollywood just the same.
Yep. Anyone's listening out there, if you'd like to call in the No Biz Like Showbiz and talk with myself or James, give us a call here at 1-888-228-4494. Yeah, let's take it away to Discovering Hollywood. Tough town, huh?
Oh, yeah, tough town. I'll tell you what, it's very interesting, though. What are some stories that you have of discovering Hollywood? I think that it's chapter one in your book, From Movie City to Music City, USA.
Well, with Discovering Hollywood, I kind of talk about, in chapter one of the book, my initial interest in the entertainment industry. I was 6 years old at the time. They were filming The Trail of Tears here in my hometown with Johnny Cash and Jack Palance. And I got to meet them on the set, and, I kind of got bit by the bug. Wasn't even working on the thing. Wasn't even one of the child actors playing one of the young Indian children. I wasn't even just, my mom took me out there. Locals were able to go out there and meet them on breaks, and that's basically where I got my interest. And about 14 years later, that's when I had the opportunity to go out to Hollywood and kind of kick the tires and try to find out how to get into this crazy business they call showbiz. And I've been pursuing it for the last 25 years.
Right.
So I'm kind of getting old. kind of like the touch on the Walk of Fame there. I mean, the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce controls the Walk of Fame, and you have to be presented to a committee to be selected to have your name on the Walk of Fame. Once the selection committee has selected you, then either if you're the celebrity, more than chances are that it's not going to come out of your pocket. Some sponsors are going to put it up, but the cost is $15,000. And I for one, don't think it's worth it. It's a lot of money to just have your name and everybody waltz on and whatnot down to Hollywood Boulevard.
But, yeah, I heard that it cost something like that, and it was all donated money.
Yeah, I mean, any celebrity that's got their names on the Walk of Fame, that's not any cash out of their pocket. It's always put up by someone else. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just think that's too much money for anybody to pay just to put your name on the Walk of Fame. But of course, I guess.
Did you start off by getting headshots or not? Did you just start getting off in the business?
I just jumped in with extra work first. I had met this old man at the time. He was, he's probably up in his 80s at the time. Met him at Denny's on Sunset and Gower in that little strip mall. It's kind of, it's called Gower Gulch. They call it Gower Gulch in Hollywood because, back in the 1950s, that's where all the, extras used to hang out on speculation to try and get selected to work as a cowboy in one of the Western movies. And so that was kind of interesting. He showed me pictures of him and Clint Eastwood, him and Robert Conrad, and, he had all the photos to back his stories up. I mean, some people are just full of it there in Hollywood, but he was able to support everything he said, and he kind of pointed me in the right direction and started getting extra work. And I had mentioned acting class, and he said, "Nah, you didn't know acting class. What for? Pay some individual who's never been a star in a film themselves, who never made it as an actress, and now they think they can teach you how to act for $200 a month." So I kind of took his advice, and I started picking up extra work. I worked in Scarface, Quincy, Knight Rider, Karate Kid, Rhinestone, Moving Violations, Lionel Richie Pepsi commercial. And as I started progressing, getting a lot of extra work, about a year later, I started doing the headshot thing. So trying to more or less pursue legitimate acting after that point.
Uh-huh.
Still without paying an acting class.
Right. Yeah, that's all a big con.
Yeah, I mean, his thought process on going to an acting school or acting class, he said, it's better to just work as an extra and network and meet people And that way you earn while you learn. That way you're not paying nobody and you're getting paid to be there.
That's right.
Although it may not be a whole lot of money, but the best way to start it, and that's what I've all, you know, his words have stuck with me, and that's what I believe to this day. Don't go to no acting school. You don't need it. But it's like if you're the director, James, of a film, and I'm the actor, say I'm the lead or co-lead, doesn't matter. You know, we've done our 4 to 5 to 6 weeks worth of rehearsal on the script. It's the director's job. Like, as the actor, you're going to have your own interpretation of that character. You're going to create your own inflection on the dialogue. But let's say I portray this character in a specific way, but you might come to me and say, you know what, try this character this way. All I have to do, if you are a good director, the only thing that is required of me is to possess the ability to follow your direction, and you will make me the best actor. That's just the way it is. That's the best way to start getting into this business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the advice that the gentleman gave me.
And being there and being just there and available to do whatever needs to be done when it needs to be done while you're there.
Exactly. And he told me another trick. He taught me another trick of the trade. He said, you can go to the film office in Hollywood, and every day they have a printout of where every film, TV show, commercial is shooting in and around Los Angeles.
Right.
You go there, they'll give it to you free of charge. You pick a set or a film you'd like to try to work on. Then you go in there like you're on speculation. You go find the set manager or the assistant director or the second assistant director and say, look, I haven't been booked on this show. I'm here on speculation. If you can use me, I'll hang around for a while. Sometimes they might say, you know what, go straight to wardrobe right now. In fact, we can use you. Or they might say, tell you what, go over there and sit in that area over yonder, and can't use you right now, but who knows? Maybe in a couple hours we can use you if you just want to stay around and see. And that's another way to secure work in Hollywood, as far as background work to work,
as well as being able to do anything they need. I don't care if it's if you don't mind dumping the trash for an hour till so and so gets back. And then we'll see if we got it. There you go.
Yeah, or craft services or pulling cables.
That's all I keep working.
Yep.
So I kept working.
Yeah, but again, if anyone out there listening to us tonight and know big show like Showbiz, give us a shout. Talk to myself, Randall Rutledge, or James Turner. Call in at 1-888-228-4404. But also like to mention before I go any further, Tim Hayes. He built my website, www.randallrutledge.com. So anybody there listening, if you need a website, check out 52designs.net. The guy's real good at what he does. But
what was that interview that you did yesterday, Randall? Tell us about that.
That was with Debbie Allen, and that's on thehomestretch.com. Debbie interviewed me about my book and what I've done in Hollywood, movie business, music business. She used to be the host of the TV show America's Dumbest Criminals. She co-created and hosted a show that aired on Channel 5 in Nashville called Talk of the Town. And now, in fact, she also used to be a news lady in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And now she's hosting her own show on the home stretch. So it was kind of neat. Some guy in San Diego called her and told her she should interview me, and then she called me on the phone, and yesterday I'm in Nashville. did the little radio spot. It was kind of cool.
All right. That's great. Yeah, we heard a dollar can go a long way.
She was asking me about my live bait vending machine because I'm also in the bait business.
Right.
And she said, "Oh, so I can put $1 in a machine and get a worm." I said, "Well, no, you can put $3 in the machine and get 12 of them in a cup." So yeah. She was cracking up. It was kind of cool. She's a nice lady. I had a lot of fun with it. A lot of fun with it.
And where can you get that interview at?
www.onthehomestretch.com, and you'll be able to hear the archive of my interview from Nashville yesterday. So what, anything new you there in the Vegas territory?
Well, just that, let's see, just the bikini thing. The thing I did last week was the newest big thing, the bikini parade, which was great. And I told you I saw Conan O'Brien out here by the sign. These guys are out here all the time. I'm telling you. Didn't believe how packed that Las Vegas sign gets since they rebuilt around the sign. And, in case anybody's going out there anytime soon, even. It's a great pad that they built around the Las Vegas sign for everybody to take pictures. And now there's just a line of people over there.
Wow.
At that sign taking pictures. It's amazing.
Well, I'm gonna be out there in September. We'll start kicking the streets and shaking the bushes again.
Yeah, it's gonna be a hot one, buddy.
Well, maybe I'll wait till the middle of December.
It's only May, and we're already pushing 100.
Wow. Yeah, I remember when I lived out there, like 120 in the shade. So what, everybody kind of knows, well, when folks who may have listened on Station 1 when we was there on bbsradio.com, kind of knows about my beginnings in the industry. Let's tell the folks about your beginnings in show business. What interests you in this crazy business? Or how did you get your start trying to pursue it?
Well, my interest really began watching the old movies with my mom. So, you know, it was always watching Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Danny Kaye, all these guys, man. That show business, you know.
People that actually had talent.
Exactly. I mean, dancing, singing. Oh, just
multi-talented.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much, you know, mostly what my mom watched when I was a kid. So I always loved it, and, watched it when I was growing up. And my mom began to get me into a few things, and as I said, I did it was a David Garrison's talent show at KCOP Channel 13 when I was a kid there for about 9 weeks. And dabbled here and there, but nothing heavy over the years. That show had gotten canceled, and I got into my music, and so I started playing, and I played on a few things, and just small recordings, and from church, and other stuff like that with my guitar, and singing, getting into chorus, and singing at different plays, and, you know, stuff like that. And when I moved here to Las Vegas in 99, which I came out for New Year's for a vacation. Went home, packed my stuff, moved out a week later. And in just a few months, I had a play and then the movie Played to the Bone with Woody Harrelson and Antonio Banderas. It's a featured role. And that, and then here we go. I just started making friends.
Well, you also worked with Cher and Madonna and what else? Radio.
Yeah, musicals? Yeah. Well, from that movie, from one film, from one job, one gig, which it lasted a month. It was a good gig. Made a lot of new friends, a lot of connections. It took off from there, and after that movie. And Tom Sizemore was in the Robert Wagner, a lot of stars that I auditioned for that one. The rest of them were just people that I know and met, and I did the local series here. I did so many things, local series, the strip here. I was in the Mexican. I did Precision Driving and that. Cher came out with HBO and she started her tour. And I did four or five things in that. And then it just took off from there. I did Britney Spears, industrial shows for Toyota, Mercedes. They put on full productions, you know, with just the B-52s, Hootie and the Blowfish, Penn and Teller.
Cool.
You know, all kinds of, and I just ended up working behind the camera as well, just to keep working. A couple of commercials I did too. A lot of stuff. Billboard Awards, SP Awards, Radio Music Awards. That means I've worked with the producer, and I've done everything from work with Talent Craft Service, going to the airport, picking them up, bringing the crew here to the hotel, setting up the office, a stage manager, makeup, whatever, working with the talent, make sure they're taking, whatever, transportation, done it all. And cool. I would end up doing four or five things during each time, and then, you know, just doing good work and keep going.
Well, you establish good relationships and, you know, maintain professionalism, and that keeps them calling you back no matter what.
Right, that's the thing, is that I kicked butt like that, but I was versatile, plus I had a truck. So my truck kept me working, too. Because then I could do craft service. I could go to Sam's Club, grab all the goodies, grab all the water, the sodas, the whatevers, blah, 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 stock it all up my truck, get stuff for stage if they needed supplies. You know, I just, the more accessible and versatile you are, then you just love being around it. You know, I just love being around it.
I mean, once it gets in your blood, man, that's it. You're just hooked and you're...
you may need a break from it every once in a while, but it's like your passion. I don't care if it's music or sewing, whatever. You know,
yeah.
You want to take a break, but you're always going
to... Well, like what I say in my book, From Movie City to Music City, USA, I turn the last chapter, I kind of tell everybody, I don't care what you want to be. I don't care if you want to be a producer or a pilot, an actor or an architect. It makes no difference. Don't listen to nobody and just do what you want to do. Do what your passion is. Pursue what you feel you want to. So, you know.
That's right.
Kind of, because the thing is, I'm sure you've met the people, too, that kind of like want to guide you away from things or don't want you to succeed or even halfway succeed. You know, I've run into those folks, but I just don't care. I shrug it off and keep going. It's just, no one's going to stop me from doing what I want to do or what I want to try to do. Want to elaborate on how we first came to meeting up?
Well, let's see. We met at Ellis Island, the casino here, of course, in Las Vegas, and I think you were producing... the Las Vegas Singers Roundup with Steve. We're over there singing over karaoke over there. And I sang, and the next thing I know, you and Steve called me over to the booth, and mentioned who you were and said something about a show and competition, you know, all that stuff. And I don't know if I wanted to, you know, I was interested in being on the show and part of the competition. I was like, yeah, that'd be great. It's an honor, you know, just for kicks. I wasn't doing too bad. I was working really hard at my singing at that time because it was a phase in time when I was really, really working on it. I did a lot of good stuff. Even got to sing with Clint Holmes and a lot of talent here in town. On that road. So anyway, so I did the show. We just hit it off and went to take over the world. And God stopped us.
Yeah, the little 23-year-old station manager of KYRK TV Channel 35. I still can't believe for the life of me when he said to us, when it comes to the TV station, I am God. I'm thinking, well, let's take a couple of side steps to the right and get away from this guy. Wait for the lightning bolts to strike.
Well, no, he was saying it was his show and that he was going to do whatever. And then plus they were, you know, I don't know, whatever the station they were doing. I think they were squatting myself.
But, yeah, you know, I told him, you know, I told him I created the show. I own the copyright. Where do you feel that you own it? Because we broadcast it. Well, broadcast doesn't define ownership. I own the copyright. So, I mean, that was a I will always enjoy that show. I'm going to bring it back someday. We're going to bring it back someday. Yeah. We're just going to find us a better network to throw it out there to the masses of Las Vegas. I mean,
great to see that picture again.
Yeah.
All of us on the stage there and on the set.
Yeah, if anybody out there is listening, give us a shout here at 1-888-228-4494. Those were good times.
If anybody's got stories or wants to just chat about the business or has any questions or information, please call in, share with us, join us. Love to have you. And
absolutely. I mean, this isn't just our show, it's their show.
That's right. It's information for everybody. You know, film, television, music, whatever. But, you know, last night on Idol, as I was telling you, Rod Stewart was on. And he sounded like an old man, Randall. He sounded good. He did sound good in some parts, but in some parts, he sounded like a tired old man.
He's got to be tired by now. About 30-plus years in the business?
Mm-hmm. Longer than that.
It's been around a while.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, Gene Simmons, all those guys were great, man. You talk about a blowout show.
Well, you mentioned Gene Simmons. I saw I was watching a biography of him on the Biography Channel last year sometime. And, they didn't mention the name of the band, but, the band that Kiss opened for before Kiss became famous. They were the opening act. Well, the act that they opened for, the lead singer to that act comes out and he tells the promoter, I don't know if we should even go on or not, because how in the world are we going to follow that?
Oh, wow.
They were just so impressed with Kiss themselves. They said, we should be opening for them, not them opening for us. So I kind of thought that was cool that, you know, a top headliner act would give that credibility and compliment to the unknown band that were unknown at the time.
Right.
And they were up and coming, but I thought that was just the need of that lead singer, and they didn't mention what band it was, but they said the lead singer said, man, we should be opening for them. They shouldn't be opening for us. And I just thought it was kind of neat because that rarely happens.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, they were great last night. They were awesome. Just like normal. It was amazing. All in costume and everything. Fantastic they were.
All right, Gene Simmons cracks me up, though. He's getting up there in age.
I love his show. I love Family Jewels. It's so funny. they are such a crack up. Such a crack up. Now, when you did, speaking of music, when you made yours, let's talk about your album, Nonstop Flight. How did you start getting that together?
Well, I had originally had done a demo of my song that I wrote, The Orchid or the Rose, in L.A. in a little studio. Well, it was in a guy's apartment, and the sound booth was in a closet.
Right.
I was just like, and I, this particular engineer that had the little recording studio in his apartment, he had no sense of humor, and you know, you and I were cut ups. We love to laugh. We like to have fun. And I made the statement. I said, "Oh gosh, I've got to come out of the closet now." Oh. It offended him when I said that. Suzanne was there with me. I mean, Jack Damon was there with me. Jack used to be the character Dr. Brown on the TV show General Hospital. And the guy was just so, I mean, he had no sense of humor. And when we got the demo back, you know, it wasn't mixed right. It didn't sound right. And so I still sent it out. I thought, I'm really taking a long shot. I knew that it could have been a better demo. And I got a lot of rejections from it. I knew it wasn't the greatest it could have been. Mm-hmm. But Art Ward in Nashville, producer in Nashville, he got a hold of it, and he called us up, and they said, you know, I'm in Nashville cutting my album. He was able to hear through the poor quality demo that I had.
Right.
And he was able to work the magic to give me the CD that I've got today. I mean, I know I can sing. I know I can write. But if you don't have if the whole team isn't on the same page with talent and ideas and creativity, you could be the best singer in the world. It's just not going to sound good. I mean, everybody's got to be tight.
Right.
I had the best musicians. I had Joe Bogan was my chief engineer. He's engineered for Dolly Parton, Randy Travis, Reba McEntire, Alan Jackson, Vince Gill, Brian White. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have the best of the best of, that Nashville had to offer. And that was 10 years ago, and I'm negotiating now. In fact, I was talking to a gentleman earlier from a recording studio in Nashville. He returned my call just prior to coming on the show tonight, and I'm getting geared up to go in and lay down some more albums.
Great.
So I got to get working on some material. Well, and I learned some. You know, I learned a lot from that that studio session over the years. Half the songs on the CD I wrote. The other half are by other songwriters. Track two, She Wants Me to Stay Gone, was written by Ronnie Dunn of Brooks and Dunn and Dean Dillon. Dean Dillon has written tracks that have been recorded by George Strait. The song I Will, track number four on my CD, was written by Leslie Satcher, and she's on the Warner label.
Mm-hmm.
Joey Scott wrote track 10. Double Yellow Line. So I got some great material. But what I've learned is it is far better to write the entire album yourself, because if you don't write all the tracks, and you, not that other people aren't great songwriters, but from a artist producer point of view, if you don't want to get caught paying the Harry Fox agency fee, the royalties to ASCAP, BMI, whoever the publishers or writers are with, whichever songwriters' rights organization, you're better off writing all the material yourself, so you don't have to worry about getting dinged on that down the road sometime as far as paying back royalties and things like that.
Right. You learned that lesson yourself.
Oh yeah, it's like right.
And they all have. I mean, that's even why they brought up, of course, with the iTunes and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
copying the music.
I mean, although I love this business, and I would, there's nothing else I'd rather do.
Well, now when you wrote Nonstop Flight, the title track of the album, how did you come up with that?
Well, in fact, it's funny. I was actually in Las Vegas at the time. It was like 1998, I believe. I was going down the strip. There was a billboard, and it happened to say, nonstop flight to Phoenix. You'll love it. I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute. It's only about a 40-minute flight. It's like, how about, say, a nonstop to Europe or something? So it caught my eye. I just saw that billboard, nonstop flight to Phoenix. You'll love it. And then I just kind of said to myself, yeah, nonstop flight, I'm loving you. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. So I started tweaking the lyrics and started playing with it. And then that's how that song came to be. I mean, I can see something. Not just me, but in any lyricist or songwriter or composer, sometimes something you just see for an instant can just give you a lead in to writing a song.
Oh yeah.
And it's like that one.
I get that when I'm playing songs, like when I was playing your song. When I was playing Nonstop Flight, and I would add to it. And I would just add, there's a little spin that I add to it. And I think that's the majority of it. It's really just a couple of things, but it makes it sound cool. I don't know whether you remember or not, but
yeah,
I think so anyway. And then, you know, we're doing so many things, and you're all, I want you to be my lead guitar player. I'm like, damn, I can't do everything. I got to play, I got to manage, I got to help, you know.
Yeah, it's
we used to have so much fun.
I mean, it's just, and I'm working on some more material right now. Like I say, when I do go back in the studio and cut my next album, all 10 tracks are going to be mine. And I just, I do not want to be dealing with Harry Fox Agency. I don't want to be dealing with ASCAP, BMI. I don't want to pay all those royalties, you know, because it just come back and haunt you later. You're better off.
There's just an article, as a matter of fact. Well, let's see. Probably last week, I guess. No more than a week ago, a few days ago, and it was one of the idol artists from before. Because you know, even though they don't become the American Idol, they still get, you know, it was Chris Daughtry and.
Yeah, get books and bookings and gigs.
A lot of them, a lot of them, even Taylor Hicks was one, and there was another one that was just recent. And my point being is that they talked about in their article that they are going to keep their individuality and go with an independent label and do things differently rather than just sign with Sony or, you know, Warner or anybody. I think Taylor Hicks just wrote his out, and then he's doing his own thing to do his own music, whatever. But it's what they all do, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like with today's advanced technology, it makes it totally possible to, you know, you go record your album, and then have your own website designed and sell your CDs from there. Sell them out of the back of your car, out of the back of the club, whatever you got to do. You're not going to sell a million copies as quickly in that respect, but you're going to retain more of a profit margin than the label's rooking you.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any major label executives listening to this show, I challenge you to start signing some real talent. Simple as that, buddy. Anybody out there listening and want to call in? I mean, if you work for a major record label and you want to chew me out, call me here at 1-888-228-4404, and we'll debate the issues.
Yep. Or you got anything else you want to share?
Exactly. I mean, we hope that in the next few coming weeks, people start calling in. And whether you want to get in this industry, whether you're in this industry, have been in this industry, we want to hear from you.
Absolutely. Any information that we can share with everybody, and you know, everybody's got the same stories that we got. We're just two lighthouses just shining on the radio here with a lot of information on the industry, film, television, music.
I mean,
from
between the two of us, we got about 40 years experience.
I don't care if it's contract law. I don't care if it's entertainment law. How to put a show together. They've got a thing going on out here, Randall, where they'll show you how to do, because they do the 48-hour film making thing. These people got 48 hours to make a movie.
Oh, Dove Simmons?
I just faintly know about it.
A two-day course. I know there's a guy named Dove Simmons that does like a two-day workshop on film production. He goes all over the country doing that.
Yeah, well, it's some kind of workshop that shows you how to do it in 2 weeks and do the whole thing.
Is that like from financing to distribution?
I think he means, filming the whole thing. Maybe so. I guess so. To the distribution, yes, I believe so. It's
another wall you can run up against. I mean, a lot of people don't realize how painstaking it is to secure funding to produce them.
Well, and that's what I was telling Robert the other day when he was originally telling me about it. We're both, because I told him about Nevada Film Alliance, that they were doing this thing. You can go ahead and do a film in 2 weeks. You can slam it and do all that. If you've got the people, if you've got the money, and you don't have a job. Because if you've got a day job, forget it. Because you're going to be spending every day and night filming this thing.
You'd have to have enough cast and crew. Well, not so much the cast, but you'd have to have enough crew and support crew to work around the clock 24/7 in order to achieve that.
Exactly. Not only that, I mean, and you can do it with just a few people. Nothing, but everybody's got to be on the same schedule. Everybody's got to. It doesn't happen that easy. A lot of everybody, filming on the weekends.
Do a film on Saturday and take you a year to get in the can.
You're still going to get a lot of good information out of that.
Right. Well, unfortunately, there, partner, we're running out of time here. But let's hold that thought for next week and pick it back up then. Hope everybody enjoyed No Biz Like Show Biz. If you're listening, don't be bashful. We can't bite you. We're on the phone. So come on in there and talk to us next week. Any closing thoughts there, James?
Well, just hope there's anybody who's caught a glimpse of our show to give us a call. If you got any questions, want to talk about or learn about show business, have anything at all to say. I don't care if it's about parasailing, and we'll go ahead and let that slide.
Yeah. Well, we've enjoyed this edition of No Biz Like Show Biz, and we'll catch everybody next week. And until then, keep dreaming.